We have everyone, so sorry, I'm going to go ahead and call the January 14th, 2020 work session to order. If you could stand for the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Says at this point in the agenda, plan and director's comments, I don't have any at this point right now, so we'll go on to, because we're going to have the work session discussion, and that'll be majority of my comments. So at this point, I'll open the public comments section. If there's anyone here who would like to present any comments to the planning commission, please come forward. Seeing none, I'll close the public comments. So what we have for you tonight, I'm going to kind of do a brief amount of zoning ordinance history, zoning uses, and then kind of go into the vehicle impound facility discussion. This is something that Mr. Payne and I have been working on the latter part of the fall into the new year here. So, and it all revolves around, of course, around automobile uses. So the main automobile land use in the zoning ordinance is the standard auto repair service facility. It's your original service station all the way up to your modern stations like Max Auto Center on 15. So it's a facility for the general repair, rebuilding, or reconditioning of engines, motor vehicles, or trailers, providing collision services to include body, frame, or fender repair, and overall painting. And the reason I bring this one up, generally, most zoning ordinances that derived in the 60s and 70s had towing as an accessory use historically to an auto repair service and an automobile graveyard. And the automobile graveyard land use is defined in the ordinance, but a lot of those are non-conforming uses that have basically gone away or have diminished in the county and the region. I'm a visual person, so kind of wanted to give you, this is over the decades, this is the standard tow truck that you've seen traversing the county and the region up and down the roads. The reason I point this out is this is nowhere near, and I'll show in a little bit another slide, the type of tow truck or facility that people use now. This is basically a truck with a tow dolly scenario put into it. Towing a car, barely, it's not elevated from the road. It's towed to a facility, it's repaired, it's returned to the owner, they've given the So decades upon decades since we've created zoning, this is the type of vehicle registered to use as a tow truck. Regional approach or whatever from automobile land uses, generally in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. This is historically where most of our towing service vehicles have been located and are located. And the reason I bring that up is they're commercially taxed by those localities, not in Flavanna County. But they're servicing Flavanna County for services that we count on and our citizens and business owners. So more and more we have vehicle recovery operators who are looking to locate in the county in the commercial corridors such as 250 and 15, and they're mainly looking to serve the I-64 corridor for wrecks, accidents, snow, inclement weather. If we were to look at the vehicle impound facilities to be located in the county, those vehicles could be commercially taxed in the county because they'd be housed and insured in the county. This is the type of vehicle that you now see in the last 5 to 10 years. see is your standard rollback tow truck vehicle, or as they call them in the industry, vehicle recovery truck. So if you remember the tow truck that you saw before, this is nothing like what is currently operating in the county and in the region. So this type of facility, the vehicle impound facility, will use this type of truck, bringing the vehicles in, and usually we'll go over some more of those details here soon, but normally for insurance purposes, and they stay for a short period. So the proposed definition that we're looking at this point, being a vehicle impound facility, is a facility that provides for the temporary screen storage of operable or inoperable vehicles to be claimed by their title holders or agents, or those vehicles that are awaiting insurance adjustments or claims within 30 days or less for insurance purposes. So across Virginia, vehicle impound facilities are used in mainly larger cities and jurisdictions to impound vehicles that have been abandoned on the public roadways or have not paid personal property taxes for years. That's not what we're striving for or looking for in this amendment. However, as Levana grows in the next 15 or 20 years, that could be in the ordinance. The part that we are looking at is the second part. They are used by private vehicle recovery tow operators to temporarily store wrecked vehicles and remove them from the public roads for insurance claims by the vehicle owners themselves. What we're not talking about tonight are another definition that's in the ordinance are salvage and scrap yards. Those are currently defined as facilities engaged in the storage, sale, and dismantling or other processing of uses or waste materials were not intended for original reuse in their forms. That type of use is in the I-2, the highest zoning district with a special use permit. However, the typical land uses that do salvage and scrap yards now would be retail or wholesale of used auto parts, and then they're placed onto racks. That's the new modern way and approach to do that. We're not talking about is the vehicle impound facility that has a time limit, and it does not allow for the disassembly of the autos because the insurance claims are being processed. So this is kind of a hybrid use that does not occur in a lot of zoning ordinances. But what we're striving for this request is to have the area of Zion Crossroads and other areas of the county to have a cleaner use in a shorter time frame for the storage of vehicles. So that, as we said in the beginning, we're not creating a lot of graveyards or areas where cars are going to sit for years upon years. So the proposed zoning ordinance text amendment would be to define them, as we've already discussed, and then also add this land use into the A1, B1, and I1 zoning districts by a special use permit. So that's, again, coming back to you all with the Planning Commission and the Board. And then in the I2 zoning district to make it a by right use, and each one of those would have the required landscaping and site screening. The reason that this has been brought up this fall is we do have an application that we have received and one we've gone over. I'll kind of go through it briefly. This is the original 2017 rezoning of the property on 250 on by the Carol Morris. That case was denied. The request involved the entire subject property and all of the permitted I-1 and I-2 land. I-2 land uses. This fall and coming into the holidays, they presented a new rezoning case that's a conditional rezoning that would involve only the front portion area of where the building is located and directly behind that area of the building, and the applicant is requesting only certain I-1 land uses be involved. So as a companion case or a case that would be the vehicle impound facility amendment, the request would be to permit a vehicle impound facility as an SUP or by right in those land use designations that we talk about.
who's initiating the zoning text amendment?
That's actually what we're discussing tonight, so.
The landowner.
The landowner has proposed that.
This is the same group of people from 17, now in 19.
Right.
Different landowner, same landowner.
Same landowner, no change. So we did request, since this was previously heard, and they went beyond their one-year timeframe to come back before, which, you know, turned into 2 years, that they held a community meeting back on December 5th, meeting the community there at Beaver Dam Baptist rather than coming here to the Morris Room. And the applicant's representative presented the conditional rezoning case and the proper outland uses that basically are higher I-1 district land uses. So the I-1 conditional rezoning application was filed shortly prior to that, and then they held the community meeting, and we gained input from the community, where they felt a little more receptive to it, but they were still guarded because of what had happened in the past. So we've asked that they respect the rights of the adjoining landowners, and the landowners were offered up to let the applicant know of other uses that they wanted to have proffered out. The applicant went over those from December 5th to January 5th and filed basically the same type of proffers that they had started with.
So they didn't change?
So they didn't change any of the ones that they'd asked for that night, that were ones that they were still looking at doing, contractor shop and storage yard, lay down yard, so forth like that. I do have those, but that's what I'm trying to do here is focus on the vehicle impound facility zoning text amendment. And you know, at one point, some of the uses that were higher previously that they had concerns with, those are still proffered out that they originally did when they met with staff this fall. So again, you know, the zoning text amendment that Mr. Payne and I have prepared and proposed for you tonight is not subject only to this conditional rezoning. We'd like to see this put into the zoning ordinance as a land use for this request and future requests. So again, to reiterate, previously when I read that it is a facility that provides for temporary screen storage of operable and operable that are either claimed by a title holder agency or awaiting insurance claims.
So this is not a junkyard?
It cannot become a junkyard, and normally vehicle impound facility as a private sector use. In the insurance claims process, they do have to do the claim within 30 days or less. Most of the time, everything is taken care of within 45 days. And then those vehicles that are returned as totaled, they're then sent to a salvage yard and not kept in this type of vehicle impound facility.
Question.
Yes.
Like when we talked about screen facility, should we have it be screen secure facility? Should something like that be required to be secure?
The insurance industry normally does some of that as part of the requirements for that for their claims purposes. The security of it, it's really not something we're looking to define or condition.
I wasn't going to talk about the security, but the facility, like, when it's not in operation, to be locked or something like that.
I don't know that we necessarily want to get into that, except in the context of a site plan or a special use permit.
Okay. I'm just kind of curious about whether it should be.
You're going to have different kinds of uses. What Mr. Miles has described is a typical unit that's going to deal primarily with insurance claims, but it's conceivable that you could talk about other kinds of impounds too, repossessions, for example.
And that was brought up, yeah.
So in the screen part, would somebody say that they planted trees along the line, would that be a screened facility? Or would it have to be a fence?
Well, they gotta go through the site plan process.
Okay.
Yeah, and you all would, you all, not only as the definition of the use, you all would have the opportunity and the board to condition it through the SCP process even higher than what the zoning ordinance requires.
Except in the I-2, the I-2.
Except in the I-2, which in the I-2 area, that's basically in an area that's totally, uses are even lower than, I mean, higher than this type of use. So we're trying to.
Are they, do they have, they requested an I-1 rezoning?
Yes, they've requested an I-1.
So this would require the rezoning, zoning text amendment to be enacted.
Right.
And then an SCP.
And then.
In this case, yes.
That's right, yes.
And.
So it's a three-step process.
I mean, you mentioned, okay, the insurance windows, the insurance industry has a 30-day window. They like things to get done, but then you mentioned repossession, things like that.
Yeah, you could have a facility as repossession, as a vehicle income facility.
But at the beginning, you kind of, at least I interpreted what you were saying, led me to believe that these would be temporary storage of a vehicle.
Right.
Is there, what is the limit on repossession? Well, what are we gonna define the limit as 30 days?
Normally, the repossessions are normally.
Repos are gonna be quicker because they want to turn it around.
Turn it back over to the building.
Granted, but how are we enforcing it? Because these guys, I could bring anything I want in there. Say it's an insurance claim, say it's a repo, say it's whatever. And that would be difficult to prove it wasn't without some, so, but what if I just leave them there? What if it actually becomes a junkyard? How do we enforce that?
Then that's actually, the requirements are not being met of the SCP for that type of request. So that's just like any other code enforcement. We would enforce the conditions of the SCP based upon that. And if need be, if they didn't meet the requirements in the end, they would, you know, the revocation of an SCP would be considered.
How would you handle an abandoned vehicle? Earlier, we were talking about abandoned vehicles left along the highway or something like that. Would that still be the 30 days, or do they have longer to try to?
This is essentially a waiting period. So it would depend on the nature of the vehicle, because what frequently happens is if you have a vehicle that's operable or could be made operable, you take it to an auction place, or you just sell it on the market. If it's a junker, then you take it and dispose of it to a salvage yard.
Yeah, a lot.
This is a way station, essentially.
So a lot of the vehicles that a vehicle recovery operator is gonna be looking at, is he's gonna want to turn it around within 30 days, or else he doesn't get paid. Because they're on the sheriff's department's call list to pull a vehicle out of 250 or out of 15 or 53 or I-64. If we get the response call instead of Louisa, based upon, you know, where it is, you know, closer to Charlottesville, it's us, and the other way it's them. So there are a lot of times that when they get into this type of operation, it's almost like when you bring a vehicle to be repaired and, you know, they find out the transmission needs to be replaced and you're like, oh, I can't pay $800 to have a transmission. Well, they're gonna have a penalty to remove that vehicle within 5 days, or else you start paying a $25, $50 a day period for your vehicle to sit at the repair shop, because that gentleman doesn't have space to leave five or six cars at a time there. So there's monetary things that they may put into their business operations that we're not involved in. So
without this zoning text amendment, this can't occur in Flamingo. Right. Today, none of this, right, one of these could not be established.
That's right.
They came to us and said, you know, hey, we've even looked through the zoning ordinance. It doesn't specify anywhere in the zoning ordinance that I can do tow.
So it's true. If you had a fender bender and you need to get your car fixed.
Oh, yeah, I understand the purpose. Yeah.
Well, no, but what I'm getting at is if you get your car towed from where your fender was bent to the body shop, the body shop stores it until it's fixed like this, but it would be for a shorter period yet. this is to store while you're waiting to dispose of it.
Right, and this one way or the other. Kind of specifically mentioned that it's not for being a place for vehicles to be repaired.
Right.
Or taken apart.
That's right.
Is there, they sit as they come in and then they're hauled away as they came in.
Right.
They're either taken to the repair place or something.
Correct. After the insurance claim is processed, then it may migrate over to an auto body shop to be repaired.
But it could be, or it could be perfectly operable.
Yeah, or it could be operable.
It could be somebody that, say, abandoned on public highway and was towed there to get it out of the road. They could come get it and drive it away.
And that's the original part of the definition.
And passing this zoning text amendment, that is a completely separate action. Whether we recommend approval of rezoning, whether we recommend approval of the SUP.
That is not site-specific to the property he's talking about.
No, so we can say, yeah, we probably need this in Fluvanna County, recommend approval of the ZTA, and then look at the specific circumstances around this zoning and SUP application and say no.
Yeah.
Or recommend no.
Yes.
But and what, let's go over the history. Is it all A1 still?
Yes.
Okay.
The current property of the Morse property, yes, that's currently just A1. Never was rezoned.
Now, did they own front and back?
They own the entire parcel.
Okay. So, this is going to be difficult for us.
Yeah, and again, I'm trying to help
there's
you all.
Some subtleties.
Yeah, if you've noticed, I haven't placed any of the names of the applicant in there, and I do that for a reason so that we can stay objective based upon the discussion of the zoning text amendment.
Yeah, the ZTA should be objective on the specific conditions of this. Or,
so
that's why I asked that question. I'm having trouble. but by focusing just on the ZTA, I think I can resolve that part of my moral dilemma.
Sounds a lot like what the adjacent property owner sounded like at the meeting.
Yeah,
they were, I think they were insulted because Mr. Morris didn't show up himself. He sent his lawyer, I think, for acting.
It was his lawyer's clerk.
Clerk, okay. And
was it the Mississippi guy?
But the, and I understood their feelings because Mr. Morris had been very rude to some of the people who live in the subdivision and threatening, and so they felt that he at least should have come and been a little more hospitable to them.
In the event, he felt it just as well he wasn't.
Yes, because I don't think he's capable of that.
Yeah, I don't think
well, that was Harry Austin,
their feelings,
the gentleman who did come.
Yeah.
He's kind of come to us with a different, more conciliatory approach, try to indicate that we
were very little smooth.
Yeah, and he's done this for other zoning cases. So Mr. Parker and Mr. Morris were not at the meeting intentionally. And so that was the approach that they've now, obviously, when they become before the Planning Commission and board, they will be. Kind of getting on to this process that we're currently talking about, after the community meeting was held for this request, they've refiled or finalized and filed their proper statement within the allotted time. We would still have them conduct the normal neighborhood meeting that's held here in this room. They would still come forward to the Planning Commission as a rezoning, and then where it goes from there, that's up to you all. But it's hard for us to, let me kind of state it this way. It's hard for us also to come and ask for you to do a text amendment without a case, because then you're like, well, what do we need this for? Why are we entertaining a use that hasn't even materialized? So I've gone through this before in my career. We had tattoo parlors and things like that wanted to come in to my previous locality.
And then Mr. Robinson went to the planning school.
Again, there is usually something that's tied to the request, but as Mr. Zimmer asked Mr. Payne earlier, you could recommend denial of the rezoning and you could recommend approval onto the board of the vehicle impound facility zoning text. document. It's not that the two have to be married to one another.
I think that the problem is its location, being right next to the residential. When they put in that subdivision, I thought, why would anybody want to live next to the,
right,
the salvage yard or the...
I don't think it's any mystery that in retrospect, zoning that property to R1 is a mistake.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. That's when the mistake was made, not with LQ.
Right. That's right.
They zoned that next to Costco's and allowed some money to construct.
I remember when it was
done. That was a mistake.
Clearly a mistake.
Yeah, that would be too.
So you've just kind of...
But...
Made this, yeah. That's where we're trying to find the middle ground, the vehicle income facility. That's not a repair shop with a storage area. It's not a salvage yard. It's the happy medium and hybrid in the middle.
But the point is this use would be available by its terms anywhere in the county. Would not have any direct relationship to this property. It could be applied to this property.
But there would be very, very, what I-2 zoning do we have? There'd be very few places.
There's not much.
This could happen without at least an issue.
No, that's right. But I mean, this use would not, by its terms, be limited to this property.
Right. And is this proposing, just trying to clarify the ZTA a little bit, is this proposing that, I thought I saw that A1, B1, no. I1, this could be done with an SUV?
Yes.
Is that wise, or should we say it needs to be I-1 or B-1 to put in this, or is this...
That'll be something for you to decide.
That's something.
Okay,
yeah.
So those are things that could be decided. We could say, you know what, we don't want this happening in A-1.
That's right.
Okay, good. Good.
Now, on that point there are areas, and when we normally do a zoning text amendment, we're not only trying to bring something into compliance in the zoning ordinance, but we're also trying to bring uses that are non-conforming into compliance with the zoning ordinance. And the fact that I raise A1 is that's where you have most of your auto graveyards.
And they can be hidden easier than...
Correct. And the location of some areas in the county that are not served by vehicle impound facilities would be better served in an A1 district to not have to rezone something to B1 to then get an SUP for that applicant. And the other thing that we like to do in creating a zoning text amendment is to always allow a district that it would be by right. Otherwise, you're restricting a use, to only SUP, only the board considers where it can go. And in a zoning text amendment, that's not what we're trying to do. We were trying to expand for future uses that could be there. But in working with Mr. Payne, we also felt this is one that we wanted the commission and board to have some control over, rather than just having it brought in. I think you all did this in my research a couple years ago with some of the definitions for auto graveyards and some of those things for better enforcement for Mr. Miller taking cases to court. So this is kind of the next level or evolution of trying to get. The goal really is to, as the county grows, as the region grows, have those type of facilities so they're not responding from Madison County, they're not responding from downtown Richmond, downtown Charlottesville. It's almost like a private sector response time. What is the response time to get a tow truck to the accident scene? That's a companion to this. I mean, what is the, after an accident occurs, an ambulance, a fire truck comes, the next thing is a tow truck. So,
got firm close. You cut into his business.
So we're trying to, well,
a monopoly on the interstate exits.
But again, that's kind of the way that we look at it in the true sense of the zoning ordinance is, how can we, locality, become part of that process and not count on other localities to serve our citizens and business owners? And for me, the beauty of it from a taxation thing is now those vehicles are, these very nice, beautiful tow trucks are stored and housed in the county, and they're taxed in the county. So So you're actually gaining some additional revenue on the, with Mr. Sheridan taxing these now and housed and insured in the county. Whereas for decades, those vehicles have not been here and they've been serving us. So. That's basically kind of my presentation, but one other thing Mr. Payne wanted, you know, we wanted to let you know, we're not really looking for this to be adopted or recommended tonight. It's something that you can do. We can ask for that before we proceed, but we also have, like I said, the two cases that would come before you on February 11th scheduled right now at this point. But again, it's the zoning case, man. The zoning text amendment can just be this.
This item comes to you from the section of the ordinance captioned uses not provided for. And those are permitted to be done by landowners. So the landowner can come in and ask for the use to be added to the ordinance. This is not like the more common way to do it is for either for the board or the commission to initiate the amendment. This is being initiated by a private landowner.
And so unless we act this one and the board acts before our next planning commission meeting, we could act on the rezoning next time, but we couldn't act on a special use permit because they'd be asking for a special use permit that does not exist in the county ordinance.
Right. That's right.
And that's the beauty also. We also wanted the mechanism for, we wanted to see this applicant's true intentions to filing the I-1 rezoning for limited uses. And that's what we discussed with them. So even if the planning commission and the board pass the I-1 rezoning with the limited uses, we want to see them come back through the same process and demonstrate the vehicle impound facility would be truly what they were wanting to do. And we believe that to be the case, but we are guarded as well because of what previously occurred and what we've seen this property owner do. My real approach, I would rather see, because it's been alluded to us to the fact, I would rather see the contract purchaser, the tow operator, vehicle recovery operator, become the applicant for the SUV as the contract purchaser of the property. And that's what we've been told. So then we could see if that's true.
But we can't require that.
We can't require that.
The landowner has a right to do it.
As the case involving this piece of property with their violation of the zoning ordinance and everything else that happened, some beginning and said, has that been resolved?
No.
Are they in compliance?
No, there are several cases. The enforcement case has been resolved because they simply abated the use.
Okay, so that part's been
they
resolved.
They abated the use and the Commonwealth's attorney non-suited the non-pros the criminal enforcement proceeding. The other cases have not been resolved.
What are those?
I'm going to ask the chairman how long we've got to talk about it.
We've got 25 minutes, right?
I'm currently the chair.
We've got 25 minutes, right?
Yeah. I mean, basically,
I'm not going anywhere. How about you guys?
To answer kind of the zoning case process and then the vested rights that would occur afterwards.
So that the vested rights is still
I believe that the
vested rights is not going to resolve.
Yeah, Mr. Morris and Mr. Parker keep moving the case for like 90 days to have this window come before you and the Board of Supervisors.
The way that got moved was we had there's a process called a judicial settlement conference, which is now mandated by the Supreme Court, and the one of the cases that came up, I think it was the one, was a declaratory judgment action about how the Board of Zoning Appeals didn't have jurisdiction to hear their appeal.
I was here for that guy, for the Mississippi attorney's
lengthy
dissertation.
So it became obvious that we had this judicial settlement conference, and it became obvious that the legislative remedy needed to be pursued before any of this comes down, because obviously if he's complaining about a rezoning being denied, and then the reason then he gets a rezoning that's satisfactory to him, the whole issue's moot. So the presiding judge in the conference suggested we defer this. We continue the court case to allow the administrative process, the legislative process, to catch up. And that's where we are. Now, if the legislative process can't be completed in time for the continued court date, we either go ahead and try the case or we continue it again. My guess is I can tell you what Judge Moore would prefer to do.
This.
Judge Moore's got plenty of work to do, let's put it that way. He doesn't need this case.
So has the time limit already been over so that he can't do that again? Don't talk about that.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
But it that will be disputed, of course.
Of course.
So in your opinion, yes. Yes, yeah. Got it. Which I believe.
I think we should go to take a ride at your leisure up to 33, turn left, going north, and see what is place looks like there, because that's probably what it's going to look like. Okay, that's just a suggestion.
Well, Trevilian's?
No.
It's in Rockersville.
Is it right?
Rainier, Corbillion.
You've probably been past it.
You've been past it.
I have. He had signs up for the longest time about the sheriff.
Probably. Yeah, I'm still on your ship.
Say yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But again, from our perspective, what we've been told is the tow operator who has these nice vehicles and everything is the person, but that's not
friendly kind of guy
that we can count on until. You know,
I'm serious.
He's Indiana's
Is the person that's going to be the tow operator, is he going to be leasing the land?
Well, that's,
we have no idea.
I have my thoughts about it, what this arrangement is, but we don't know, we don't really have any right to ask.
I can tell you, it's his partner.
Partnership.
Yeah.
Even better.
I have a friend who knows this man very, very well.
Sorry.
Yeah, that Judge John Rutherfield has been out a long time. At one time, we had some pictures of it for some reason. I can't remember why.
Well, the point about this is that for purposes of this discussion, that's relevant only in the most general sense, because this doesn't involve any particular person.
The ZTA does not.
The ZTA does not. The rezoning and the special use permit will involve a particular person, but you should evaluate the application, those applications, on their merits, not on the personality of the applicant. Well, remember that I said that because it will be a clue.
Define merits, though. I mean, if I don't believe that what you promised me I can trust, that's part of the merits to me.
No comment.
I'm just saying.
My question to you, Mr. Payne, is do you think that we at this time should go ahead with the zoning text amendment? And
I think Mr. Miles's position is it's a good idea to amend it. This would be a salutary amendment to the ordinance anyway.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I agree.
There are, basically, I'm trying to separate between Flavanna and my previous locality, but I'm going to kind of explain a few things. What we did in the Petersburg region and Prince George was Petersburg, Colonial Heights, Hopewell, and what I call Chester, the area of Chester. That entire region, tow truck operators were in every locality except Prince George. And guess where they were towing? All on 460 and 295 in Prince George. And we brought about the vehicle impound facility with the county attorney. And we actually
were receiving, and we don't have this here, but we were receiving the requests from the tow operators to be in Prince George County so they could respond faster. And I would like to be in Prince George County as opposed to being in Petersburg or Hopewell. So it was a business decision on the part of the operators to be closer to their customers. And they actually came out in support, and they were all on the Prince George County Police tow list, just like I would imagine some of the tow operators that would come forward that are on Sheriff Hess's tow list, approved tow list. But we've not reached out into that part of the community until we brought this before you.
And I know you would like, you know, good planning would say you don't do something like this without a case before you, but I think you've articulated a great reason why we'd like to see, irregardless of who's requesting today, we would like to see this in Flint
right.
County. And so the ZTA doesn't give me any heartburn whatsoever to consider that now, with or without a case before us. It's reasonable to assume that as more people are here and there's going to be more use for this, and that particularly, you know, I mean, that, again, we got one thing down at Fern Cliff. I can't think of another. There's two right at Fern Cliff. I take that back. There's two.
That's not true about you.
I know. I'm just saying, so they're servicing 64, the same stretch as the 64 that Ocean from Havana would service, but I could see this would be something people would want to do. And it would benefit the county.
This is actually a cleaner operation and way to do business. And we had, two or three main tow operators in a previous locality, and the sons wanted to do this. His fathers were like, I'm tired of cleaning up all these, and like the old Cosmers that were on the property.
Right.
What did they do? They came in and remediated or moved all that stuff due to the zoning violation. And we all know where he took them. He took them to his facility in Madison County, where he already had an auto graveyard and restocked his parts. So a lot of the family towing companies, you know, may see a benefit to this to be able to operate, because the other goal for us on this rezoning case is to make a cleaner part of 250 gradually through each case. That the Cosner site is gone. The building is there. The way that Mr. Harry Austin presented some of the information in the case that night was a lot of the uses would be in that existing brick building with some outside storage of some of the facilities. And this request, the majority of the building is going to screen anything from the public right away. Now, what we were more concerned about with the community there was the screening of, obviously, the rear sides and rear portions. So a lot of times the zoning ordinance is looking at screening things from the public right away, but in this case, this specific case, the screening needs to be done from the facility. Now, Mrs. Eager, you asked at the TRC meeting, you know, about the what type of things are noises still going to be made. Yes, is it going to be operated under this definition, are they going to operate past 11 o'clock? They could potentially do that. But once the text amendment was created and we look at the SUP process to be able to have certain conditions, hours of operation, days, times, things like that, could be further specified in the SUP on a case-by-case basis. Now, another way to do this, and I didn't feel comfortable enough, I mentioned some of it to Mr. Payne, is there are ways to do things called uses with certain restrictions that are by right in the I-2. We could also, in this text amendment, have those uses with certain restrictions in the I-2 to clarify some of those, because rather than counting on the ordinance for screening. So that was one other thing that we've considered doing. So basically what that means is there's no SUP process, but there's actually conditions that are tied to the use, but then that starts creating a domino effect of how you specify a use and conditions and not do it with other uses. So
wouldn't it be kind of hard in a business like this to limit the hours? Because if you have a wreck out here on 64 at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you can't operate after 11 o'clock at night,
correct,
it would be impossible to do.
That's one of the considerations you're going to have to deal with, right?
Well, Mr. Payne, you said something that I was sitting here thinking about. I'm not familiar with these folks or anything like that, and I just want to make sure that I'm careful not to been exposed to drama, attitude, and you deal with that every day, all day. But that decision is being made on behalf of the county for a bigger picture, a bigger relief and outcome for the citizens that we service here. And then we have to do our due diligence when people aren't following those rules and guidelines of that, the direction that we go. Because at any point in time, you may not like somebody's attitude and presentation, depending on how old they are. They haven't just started doing this yesterday. They've been doing this forever, and they've gotten away with it. And us sitting around a table today is only going to hold them back for a little while. A new group, change our perspective. Here's the person back up here again, because according to my understanding, they were here a couple of years ago or something. And so we could just be holding off on the inevitable.
Well, that's true of the rezoning and the special use permit issues. It's not true of this zoning text amendment, because this is not specific to either this landowner or this property. So I think Mr. Zimmer put it correctly. This is a much purer issue. You don't have to worry about, you know, whether somebody's going to comply or whatever it is. That's a later problem.
So can we contemplate that this would be useful to the county, and there would be places and people who would apply that we would be comfortable with?
Let me put it this way. You need to remember that zoning is a regulatory process, but the uses are actually private sector uses. And the point about this is the landowner wants to use his property in a particular way, whatever that is. Our ordinance now says he can't do it in the way he wants to do it. He's asking to amend our ordinance to allow the regulations so that he can do it under some, you know, whatever the circumstances are. And that's a separate discussion. And that's where we are. So that's why I emphasize that you're not initiating this amendment to landowners.
Another thing to bring up that I kind of stayed away from throughout most of the discussion is a lot of the requirements to operate a tow truck are state requirements. They're Department of Motor Vehicles, they're different judicial kind of things. There's interesting background checks that I never realized in researching it over the holidays. For tow truck operators, they're almost treated, as taxi drivers used to be, and Uber drivers and things like that aren't now, for the different background checks, which is great, because remember, it's 3 in the morning, you're getting into a vehicle and riding with this person that you don't even know who he is. Okay, so there are a lot of state background checks, state requirements to operate the truck, and then what was also brought up at the meeting, what about the radiator that's broken or the transmission casing that's cracked and the transmission fluid and all? That's all handled by DEQ. The area that the vehicles are awaiting their claims, that's the requirement that DEQ would handle. So there's a lot of state agency involvement in operating a facility like this that we don't condition. So I did want to let you all know that some of those kind of things are already handled through the state agencies. And obviously, people that operate these vehicles, they spend a lot of time and money to maintain that vehicle So we're hoping that other Beek 1-pound facility operators would have a better positive approach to, you know, running their facilities. So, but it does give an opportunity for other areas of the county to have these facilities. You can ask any tow truck operator, they usually haul pretty long. I mean, 50 miles is, my wife and I were coming back from Christmas on Christmas Day in the evening down 64, and there was an accident heading east the other way. And as the vehicle came back around, and I noticed he was from Waynesboro. He passed us. He responded from Waynesboro for an accident at the Ferncliff area, because for whatever reason, other areas, he put the vehicle on the rollback, put his lights on, and came past us after he U-turned. So they're responding from pretty good distances and then on Christmas Day, maybe there's not a lot of old people wanting to operate their tow truck on Christmas Day. So maybe that was the case. I don't know the factors of what.
There's a Waynesboro company that has the biggest contract with AAA in this area.
Okay.
And they come out of Waynesboro for batteries or flat tires or whatever and so forth like that.
Sure.
So, but they also kind of stay in the Shelbyville area during the daytime lots of times. So.
Okay.
So you'll see this company. I can't think of the name of the company, but I had a battery problem one time. It was a AAA battery. They came.
Right.
And they are actually the main ones for AAA in this area. I know as far as wrecker service and towing services over in the side of the county I live on, over in the Scottsville area like that, most of the towing there is done by Shul or Shelbyville Wrecker, and they come out of Shelbyville.
Right.
But also some of them live in Tuvana County and bring their trucks home at night.
Well, that's another thing that some counties and localities have grappled with is where I used to work when I was younger in Chesterville, they didn't allow you to bring your tow truck home. They don't want to park to the neighborhood. Well, that's now cutting down your response time to 10 or 15 minutes. They've changed that since I left because the county grew so much. But at one point they were not allowing people, they were allowing the tow truck operator to go to his vehicle, park 15 minutes away, get in the vehicle, and then the police and the accident scene are now waiting for that response. So that's something that I don't think we need to worry about.
I think we should recommend this text amendment and send it to the board to see
you're premature.
Okay.
You have to have public hearings before you recommend.
Okay.
This is sort of a heads up for you, and sort of a skull session.
So we do have to have a public hearing. Right?
Yes.
It has to be advertised.
Yes.
Yes.
So that'll be next month.
So correct. Yes. At these two cases, Mr. Robinson and I have prepared for the February 11th. We've actually, kind of held off the applicants and had them do the community meeting. We also didn't want a lot of this to occur over the holidays and the people who were concerned about it and out of town and all those kind of things. So yes, these two, the ZMP 1902 and ZTA 1904, are currently slated to be on your February 11th public hearing. So that would occur at your next meeting.
So also the CMPs will be held that night too?
Yes. Okay. Those two cases. I believe that's the only two we have now. We have a case for the BZA that Mr. Robinson will discuss here shortly.
Any other questions?
And since I didn't put the applicant's names on there, the applicant is the same as before, 2428 Richmond Road LLC, which is basically Carol Morse's operations. 2428 Richmond Road LLC is the official ZMP 1902 request. Do you have one conditional exemption?
Okay.
Those two cases at this point.
Okay.
Once we get our submittal deadline, then we have to deal with March and so forth. We don't know of any other cases this time.
At our February 11th meeting, will the order of those come up with the ZPA first?
It's a practical matter. You'd probably hear them together.
Yeah, you're probably going to hear them together, and we may actually have the rezoning come up first because that's the main request. The text amendment would be...
They're still going to have to come back for the SUP another month because the SUP doesn't exist.
Yeah. They have to achieve the I-1 zoning through the planning commission and board, and then they will come back and say May, June, and do the SUP.
If the SUP is recommended and then approved by the boards, they have it.
So ultimately, if they achieved all legislative requirements, they're probably looking at sometime in July, if all went well for them, that they would have zoning for that, this use. Now, again, they still would have underlying I-1 uses to utilize as well that they asked for in the request. So that's basically the end of the work session, unless there's any other questions that you all have. Well, we can break for 5 minutes prior to start of three and a half. All right, folks. Thanks. It's now the 7 o'clock hour. I'm going to call to order the January 14th, 2020 organizational meeting of the Planning Commission. If we will do the Pledge of Allegiance and moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is your schedule for tonight's organizational meeting, election of chairman, vice chairman. You're going to do your dates for the commission meetings throughout 2020. Resolution, you can find the dates and information appropriate that resolution will be passed and adoption of your bylaws and rules of procedure. And we did have one minor change to your bylaws. We'll go over in the process. So at this point, I would like to entertain motions for the election of your chairman or chair for 2020.
I'd like to nominate Mr. Bibb.
Okay. Do they need to be seconded?
Yes.
Yeah. Second.
Okay. So that's nominating Mr. Barry Bibb for your chairman. I can call the vote. Everyone on that, please say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. I turn this over to Chairman Bibb.
Okay, the next order of business is election of the vice chairman. We'll call for a motion to elect a vice chairman at this time.
Well, I make a motion that we elect Mr. Zender. Vice chairman.
Have a motion by Mr. Johnson to Mr. Zimmer to become the vice chairman. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Ms. Key. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye. Mr. Zimmer, you are now the vice chairman.
Don't miss any meeting, Barry.
Don't miss any meeting.
The next item of business is the resolution entitled Organization Meeting of the Savannah County Commission for 2020.
Date. Selection of dates.
Okay. Selection of dates for the commission meetings. And we have in front of us passed out to everybody a calendar with all the dates. Most of them are the second Tuesday of the month, the only exception being the 7th, which is our actual bylaws state the first, the Tuesday after the first Wednesday of the month. So that's why they end up this way, and that's why that one meeting in April is on the Tuesday. I think the Board of Supervisors get to meet on the first, April Fool's Day.
Please refrain from editorial comments.
So, are these dates satisfactory? Do we have to vote on that?
I don't know that you have to.
Okay. So we will move on to the organization meeting of the Fluvanna County Planning Commission, then the adoption of the Planning Commission bylaws and rules of procedures.
Okay, I do believe you need to vote on a resolution.
Yes.
This is your resolution that's before you to adopt the meeting for the Planning Commission of 2020. If everyone finds this appropriate, this is the motion here for the organizational meeting resolution to officially adopt that.
Do I have a motion to adopt the organizational meeting resolution, which was included in that package?
Sure. I move that the Fluvanna County Planning Commission adopt the resolution entitled Organizational Meeting of the Fluvanna County Planning Commission 2020, as presented.
I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second, Mr. Lysino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay. I want to thank y'all for re-electing me as chairman. Actually, tonight starts my 13th year on the Planning Commission, because I actually started January of 2008. So thank y'all for having confidence in me to be chairman. The next item on the agenda is the director's report.
We're doing your bylaws now, Chairman Biv.
Okay.
So there were, you didn't adopt those yet, so that we do have a proposal for you all to consider as an amendment to your bylaws, or an addition to your bylaws, technically. So in order for you all to be made aware of, let's say tonight, with inclement weather, or we could be in the middle of June and we have a power outage and you are calling Brad and I and saying we're having a meeting, is there a meeting tonight? Basically, the way that if Mr. Dahl deems that the county is closed for inclement weather or power outage, or I mean, you know, just the other day we had a water main break at the high school. Things happen. So what we would like to do is have this in your bylaws. So if Mr. Dahl closes the county the day of your meeting due to inclement weather or other unforeseen circumstances, the meeting is canceled and rescheduled to your next available meeting date. The cancellation then comes out through me or through Chairman Bibb to communicate to the members, applicants, and the press as promptly as possible. All the other hearing matters are moved as advertised to the next rescheduled meeting. So by doing that, that allows the applicants to be aware that the meeting is canceled. And then that staff is not, you know, wondering if we're coming in, you all are coming in, driving in 6 inches of snow, or it all melts by that time and then it refreezes overnight and you know, you're trying to travel home. So the better part of valor is if the county is closed for the day, we would like to have it as an opportunity for you all to feel comfortable.
And that would be kind of technically in accordance with what really happened to our meeting for the night, which we really supposed to have been on the 7th, but because of the New Year being on the 1st, it had to be moved to because of the Board of Supervisors meeting.
Well, that was a special case.
Yeah.
He's talking about one where you have a regular meeting. Emergency. A regular meeting is simply catered by the certain circumstances. Yeah.
And by that, it sounds like you don't reschedule the meeting. Everything just gets moved to the
just
next
gets
week.
Moved, yeah.
Right.
So
to the next available day.
So, Chairman Bibb, to your point,
the one that talks about that is here. It's item A, except as otherwise directed, the regular public meeting shall be held on this. So except as otherwise directed, that's where Mr. Dahl or myself or one of us are letting you all know, because the board has changed their schedule, we're going to change your schedule as well. So that's already built into your bylaws to allow as except as otherwise directed. So, but as you stated earlier, the first meetings are held on the first Tuesday after the first Wednesday of the month. And then just to remind you all, a special meeting can be called by the chair or three members. So that's the other part. But going back to the inclement weather, we just recently at the Thomas Jefferson PDC also adopted similar language for this, because we actually organize our meetings in July, and then a lot of times 6 months later, people forget, hey, what happens if the rural tech committee meeting scheduled for the 21st and we have snow, what happens? So all of a sudden we're scrambling and calling Chip Oils and finding out is the PDC closed for the day or that kind of thing. So we just added this kind of same type language to our bylaws there as well. It just helps, gives everyone clarity that if the head of the county has made a decision, we're all going to follow that and honor that.
Do I have a motion to adopt the Planning Commission bylaws and rules and procedures for this year?
Not yet. I have a couple questions about it. On in Section B, it refers to Mr. or Madam Chair. And then there's two other places where throughout the practice and procedures, it refers to he. So is the word he being used just because that's what's used when contracts and things are made? And I ask that because of the specificity of Mr. and Madam Chair, if they are to be addressed.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I understand your question.
So there's section in here that refer to he and his.
Right. Traditionally, that's the
right
default position.
So I'm asking, is that because that's tradition, then we go to refer to Mr. or Madam Chair? I just want to know if it's just standard practice in contractual language that it's always he, unless you're referring to Madam.
Traditionally, that's been the case. Yeah.
So is there any reason we wouldn't seek to update the bylaws to a more inclusive kind of language?
Depends on whether you want to have six more keystrokes.
Please
put it amounts to.
Yeah, and actually in my review, Ms. Marquis, of that, I did look at that. I considered the chair and vice chair is gender neutral. And that's typically, in fact, I didn't change anything in here of the organizational meeting information. I myself, as the planning director or county planner, as I'm listed here in the bylaws, I would prefer to be chair and vice chair and not sir or madam or chair, but again, I didn't want to have take liberty and go through and make some of those changes unless that came up for you all tonight.
I think it's a matter of the commission's preference, how you want to do it. I don't think legally it has any significance, because I think if you have a female chairman, which you very well might have, these rules are going to apply to that female chairman as well as to a male chairman.
We've had several female chairmen during the period of time that I've been on that.
And we've also had female planners.
I just, just like Mr. Zimmer is paraphrasing for me. That's why I wanted to know the answer to the question, because throughout time, they have been, and I mean, to some people, it's not a big deal, but for us to say Madam or Mr., to me, it's just important. I mean, it's a official document that represents everyone here, And so I would like to ask the board, because of those additional six strokes, can we, you know, is it too much to say they, or so that it is gender neutral? Because saying he is gender neutral.
The English language doesn't permit gender neutral. You can be general, but gender general, if you will.
Right. But think of what, you know, with under the planner instead of he.
If you want to do that,
state a planner.
You could do that.
Yes.
As long as I don't have to type it.
And but we kind of need these bylaws to function tonight, right?
It would be desirable. Yes.
So can we adopt these bylaws with a caveat or whatever, a codicil or whatever a lawyer would call that, of asking the planning department to take
sure.
a look at those and bring them back either next month or the month after?
Legally, it's an insubstantial issue.
Right.
So if it's a matter of courtesy, if somebody wants to change, it can be changed, but it's not substantial to the legality of one way or the other.
So I would move that we adopt, I don't know what the motion is supposed to be, but I would move that we adopt the bylaws as presented tonight with the amendment or the addition of item J, and also in the same motion, ask that over the next 30 to 60 days, the planning department reassess them for
gender neutrality.
Gender neutrality.
Thank you. I'm not sure what to call it.
We can do that in 30 days.
So yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Does that need a second or something?
Yes.
For some places in there, it does say he slash she.
I didn't see that.
There's several places.
Well, it will when we get done, if that's what you,
I am.
You adopt.
I am, yes. I second that.
So you have a motion and a second.
I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer and a second by Ms. Keith.
Yes.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. At this time we will have the director's report.
So your case summary, quieter over the holidays and into the new year here. No cases, no zoning cases before December 18th. Well, actually, that was the special meeting for the Second Amendment. January 8th was the organizational meeting, those cases, and no variance cases here in January. Technical Review Committee, about a month ago, we had the mechanical Building Solutions, the site located across from our pump station. That was also a case that BZA had a withdrawal of a variance case for the setback from the property. The Mechanical Building Solutions did get passed. The Foothill Irrigation one was also, that's before you tonight for the sketch plan. Mr. Robinson can also let you know that there is a setback variance that's been filed for that one to the 100-foot setback taken from 250. This is up in Zion Station. And then we also, as we've discussed kind of in the text amendment, we also met on the Richmond, the 2428 Richmond Road Morris case for rezoning. And that's coming on to you all, to the Planning Commission on February 11th. Some other updates coming here in the new year. We've done some discussions with the 2020 U.S. Census GIS mapping project. Just for all of your knowledge, the boundary adjustment information is required by the census, and we're working on that currently. We also held yesterday the most recent Zion Crossroads with Plan Technical Committee meeting. The main part of that was the traffic engineering firm from VDOT is studying the entrances and
intersections throughout Louisa and Flavanna County on the 15 and 250 corridors and gathering our traffic data. So that'll be some good traffic analysis and information that they're providing through Chuck Proctor's office at the VDOT Culpeper district office. So I don't have one listed, but next Tuesday, the 21st, Mr. Robinson and I will be going to the Rural Technical Committee meeting at the PDC to talk about some additional projects that are going on there. So, other than that, that's all I have, Chairman.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions? Thank you. Next item on the agenda is first of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward, public comment about anything in the county, come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the first of two public comment section and move on to the next item of agenda is the minutes of the December 10th, 2019. Does anybody have any comments, corrections, or motion about the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I have just a question. I'm trying to get to that list. Correction. I don't know if it would be page 22 in an actual printout, but where it says planning zoning materials to VDOT Louisa Residency 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I wasn't understanding what that was. Just in case I didn't get into the bar.
That's how the course went before. Oh, part of the, okay.
Is that part of the minutes?
No.
I went too far.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's down in Scott Miller's.
So that's in the code enforcement side.
Yeah, enforcement. I'm good.
Do I have a motion about the minutes?
I move we accept the minutes as presented.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer, a second by Mr. Key. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Minutes are approved. There are no public hearings or no presentations tonight. The next item is a site development plan, SDP 1923, Foothill Irrigation Sign Station Lot 4, Brad Robinson, Senior Planner. Before we go forward, I will make one statement so that everybody will know that my son works for this company. I don't see a conflict, and I have talked to Mr. Payne about this, but my son does work for this company, so I want y'all to be aware of that because I believe in putting everything forward.
All right, good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This is the site development plan submittal that we have received from Foothill Irrigation, site development plan 1923. And it's a request to construct an office building, warehouse, and carport on a lot within Zion Station subdivision. That lot is tax map 5244. It is zone I-1, and the subdivision is within the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area. And that map just shows the location of the project in Flavanna County, which is basically the northern end in Zion's Crossroads. This is an aerial of the Zion Station subdivision, and the subject parcel is the one outlined in with the orange property lines. So that's lot 4. And I've attempted to label on the screen of showing you how Zion Station is sort of developing and building up. We have submittals on most of the well, excuse me, you can see most of the lots have been developed, and then the ones that are vacant but labeled, we have some sort of submittal on those lots, including this one. And this is the zoning showing that the subject property is zoned I-1. It's everything around it. There are two lots within Zion Station are zoned business, B-1 and then I-2. And this is the applicant sketch plan. The three buildings going from left to right, if you're looking on the screen, the first one is the office building. That's the largest building, which is 2,016 square feet. Then you have a warehouse that's going to be adjacent to that. That is 800 square feet. And then the smallest building over to the right-hand side is the carport, which is 400 square feet. And then in front of the office building, you'll see the driveway and the parking area coming in from the end of Zion Station Court Road, a parking area containing 10 spaces. And then around the warehouse and the carport, there will be a gravel storage yard. And I will mention that this sketch plan submitted by the engineer currently complies with the setback requirement of the I-1 zoning district. But as mentioned, the applicant has submitted a variance application to reduce the setback from Route 250, which runs to the south of the property there, as you see on the screen. And to be clear, you may remember last summer there was a text amendment we did to amend the setbacks within industrial subdivisions. That's in this case of this lot, that setback or that amendment only applies to the setback from the Zion Station Road, not Route 250. So that's why the applicants have to request a setback. And then I'll also mention that should that variance request be approved by the Board of Zoning Appeals, that would move the building slightly closer to Route 250. So on the screen, that kind of already talks about everything I just went through, the three different buildings and their sizes and the variance request. The one bullet on the screen that talks about the sidewalk where you should see in the packet that that's also a part of this site development plan approval. And as has been customary in Zion Station, because there are no sidewalks there, most of the lots have been granted a waiver. So we're recommending the same for this project. So to conclude, this is a sketch plan for the construction of a new business and a relocation of a business to Zion Station. The project appears to meet the zoning ordinance requirements. They will have to file a final site plan after approval of the sketch plan. Staff recommends approval of the sketch plan subject to the three conditions in the staff report. That concludes my presentation, and I believe the applicant is present. Would you like to make any additional comments?
I'll wait for your questions.
You did fine.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Robinson or the applicant? Yeah, you're moving your business from another county to another county.
The commission approves.
Do I have any questions for either Mr. Robinson or the applicant, anyone? If not, do I have a motion? I think we would probably have two different motions, because one about the sidewalk and questions.
I move to approve SDP 1923, a sketch plan request to construct an office building, warehouse, and carport with respect to 1.92 acres of tax map 5, section 24, parcel 4, subject to the conditions listed in the staff report.
I have a motion by Ms. Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. We have another item on the agenda about the sidewalks. Anybody to make a motion about the waiver to approve it or deny?
I move to approve sidewalk waiver to SDP 1923, a sketch plan request to construct an office building, warehouse, and carport with respect to 1.952 acres of tax map 5, section 24, parcel 4, pursuant to the county code section 22-23-6.6.8.
Have a motion by Ms. Mary Key to have a second.
Second.
Have a motion by Ms. Mary Key, a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0. Thank you. It's been approved. There's no subdivisions, or I don't know of any unfinished business or new business. The last item on the agenda for tonight is the second of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward, speak about anything for the county, you may come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes.
I'm not public, but I have something I'd like to bring up under new business. Brad and I have received a from, what's her name? Mrs.
Beth,
yeah, who lives at, probably not here, Broken Island. And she would like us to take a look at our ordinances for the cluster, maybe review how the open space is used. I think that initially we intended the open space to be, if it's a farm, that they could continue to have the farm and have that house. But in this case, they want the large lot to be a new home, and instead of giving that an open space for the homeowners to use. Anyway, I think maybe we should relook at it and see if we can't improve so that we don't have this happen again.
I think it's specifically written that you could build a new home on that.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. She's saying maybe not.
Yes, it is right now. But, you know, there, it's a sad thing because people at Broken Island have larger lots and some almost farmettes. There was a woman who had horses, and I think she put that property up for sale, and she had just moved here because she didn't feel that she could live next to that type of subdivision that close.
To the one next to the small
Yeah,
one.
It's going to be up
yeah,
front.
Yeah.
So, I would hate to see that happen again, but I don't know what we can do, but I think we should take a look at it if you are open to that.
So we can make a recommendation that staff take a look at it and see what they think along with Mr. Payne.
I'd appreciate that, if you take a look at it. You okay with that?
I reached out to the applicant.
Yeah, I saw that you did.
So we're going to encourage her to come in and sit down and talk with staff and hopefully have a good discussion.
Good.
Back to the public comment section. I don't see anyone coming forward, so we'll end the public comment section at this time. Anyone else have any comments about any other thing? If not, if there's no objection to the staff or members of the commission, we will adjourn at 7:34.